Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford, and I'll be taking your calls and answering your questions for the next hour or so. Lisa is here with us, screening calls and keeping things light and fun. If you want to join in, simply press 1 on your phone, and Lisa will be right with you. This is the show that puts the money where it belongs, back in your pocket. Sit back, relax, and listen, or jump in and ask your question. You can even bring us your opinion. It's up to you. This is your show. You can ask questions about fuel mileage, tires, engine, EGR, aerodynamics, truck specking, maintenance, taxes, financial planning, getting started as an owner-operator, or anything else about the business of trucking. Here we go. Let's head on down the audio road.
Hi, this is Lisa. Remember to talk to Kevin, press 1 so I can pick up the phone and screen your calls. You know you'd rather talk to me anyway. Or just sit back, relax, and listen to the show. And at any time you have a question, just hit 1 and I'll pick up the phone.
Welcome to Questions from the Audio Road. I'm your host, Kevin Rutherford. Lisa is here screening your calls tonight. If you're listening to us online and you'd like to join in live on the call, pick up the phone and dial 347-884-8327. Once you're on that call, go ahead and press 1 on your phone. Lisa will screen your call and we'll get you on the air. I've got a bunch of stuff to talk about tonight, but I also see there are hands going up, so I may jump right into the phone calls here in just a minute or two, and as long as we've got calls, I'll just continue to take those. If we run out of calls, I'll give you some updates on some of the stuff we've got going on. Maybe I'll go over some freight indexes, some news. Try to get caught up on some things, but I do want to make sure I get to everybody's calls if we're going to have those. So if you've got a question, jump in early, raise your hand. We'll stick with the calls. I want to answer as many of those as I can. Again, if you're listening online, dial 347-884-8327. Once you're on that call, press 1 on your phone, and we'll get to your questions in a little bit. Here are a couple things that I'd like you to jump in with some ideas or thoughts on if you have any. Two projects coming up. One we've been working on for quite some time and I'd like to get some feedback on, and one that just came about last week during the CMC. Let's do that one first. That's the maintenance boot camp. Talked about it a little bit on the live show. And really, here's what happened. The CMC was 4 days long. We were in the seminar room from 8 in the morning, and we started right at 8 o'clock every morning. We usually finished up somewhere between 5:30 and 6 o'clock in the evening. So pretty long days. And the first day was negotiations, and the second day was Bruce Mallinson and Mike Beckett, and then I did 2 days. But what we found was every day after we were done in the seminar room, Mike Beckett and Bruce Mallinson were out in the parking lot doing hands-on kind of stuff all night long. People were out there for hours. I didn't get a chance to go out very often because we were also filming, and we were usually doing lighting and setup and trying to get ready for the next day, but I got a chance to go out there a couple times, and it was just amazing to see everybody. They were doing alignments in the parking lot. Mike showed them how to do alignments with his ProTrack system, showed them how to do alignments with a string and duct tape and a tape measure. Bruce was out there showing people how to change turbos and install boost gauges, and they put on crankshaft dampers and balancers, and they were checking wheel bearings and going over tire wear issues for hours every night, and people absolutely loved it. So as I was watching that happen all week long, I got the idea of maybe splitting the two seminars up. And here's another thing that we had. We had a lot of requests during the CMC for other topics, and there's just no time. Even with 4 days, I still have to pick and choose what kind of things I'm going to cover. And I cover a lot of things that we just never talk about on the radio because we don't have time. In fact, we really don't cover many things that we talk about on the air. But I still had a lot of requests for sessions on technology, some computer training, spreadsheet training. It was obvious that people really want even more than, you know, we were able to do in 4 days. So I got thinking about the concept of keeping the CMC more business classroom with some computer training and some technology training and how to write some spreadsheets, which, you know, I was showing people a lot of spreadsheets that I use to calculate load profitability and just a whole bunch of other things. And then because I just really don't think it's practical to extend that program out anymore. We could go one more day, but then the cost is going to go up. So I came up with the idea of keeping that more business training in the classroom, but I certainly don't want to lose that maintenance, and we wanted to expand on that idea. So now we're thinking maybe two events, the CMC and the maintenance boot camp, which would have some small seminars probably in the garage, you know, or that kind of a setting where you would get hands-on kind of training, but really set it up as stations where you would be able to go see things happening maintenance-wise and do some things hands-on just like we were. You know, a training session on alignments and actually doing alignments and, you know, installing parts and doing basic maintenance and testing charger coolers and learning about cooling systems and AC systems and brakes and learning how to do a really good hands-on inspection of your own truck. We've had a lot of interest when I mentioned that concept. So what I'd like to get from you tonight is some feedback on that idea. If we were to do that, two events a year, one CMC, which is more business, and we would expand that maybe into some technology training, give us some ideas on what kind of training you'd like to see in that situation. And then the maintenance boot camp, and we don't even know how many days it would be. What we're in the process of now is laying out all the ideas on paper, the things that people would be interested in doing at an event like this. And it sounds kind of crazy because we've already been pretty well swamped this year with projects and events, but we'd almost like to pull one of these off by this fall, maybe mid-October when the weather outside is pretty nice, those kind of crisp, clear days where it's nice to throw on a set of coveralls and be outside working on the truck. If we do that, if we can pull it off by fall, what kind of things would you like to see? And we're going to lay them out, prioritize, you know, what we really think is worth doing, and then try to decide how many days the event would be and cost and what's going to be included and those kind of things. So I'd love to get some feedback on that. The other thing I'd like to get some feedback on tonight is we are in the process of working with David Counts of Fleet Air Filters, who also owns Bay RV. And now that I have seen their facility, my mind is just going kind of wild with possibilities because they can fabricate anything here, whether it's fiberglass, metal, aluminum, upholstery, paint work, body work, whatever it might be, cabinet work. I mean, they can fabricate really just about anything here. And David is so good with that kind of stuff. We're working on the Signature Truck B Series, And David is really the lead on that. He is building that truck. It's here now. It's a 97 Kenworth T600. It's got 1.5 million miles on it, and it's pretty rough. It's pretty beat up. And we are going to do a frame-off recondition of the entire truck. And what I'm looking for, obviously it's going to be signature truck specs, and I've got some new things we want to try, but we're also looking for maybe the wow factor. What kind of things would you be interested in seeing on a truck that maybe we haven't done yet? And the sky's the limit. We're open to any kind of possibilities as far as what you might want to see on that. Paint work, interior work, engine, new concepts, whatever it might be. Give us some ideas on that, because I'm designing that truck now, and it's probably coming into the shop next week to have the cab pulled off the frame, and we'll get started on the frame up kind of stuff. We're looking at possibly one of the themes I'm considering is building it very light, going with lightweight brake drums, lightweight fifth wheel, and seeing how much weight we could shed off of a tractor without compromising anything. So that's one possibility. We may go down that road, but if you've got some ideas, give me some ideas on that. And speaking of Fleet Air Filters, tonight's show is sponsored by Fleet Air Filters. If you've got any questions, they've got a new generation of filters that's going to be coming out soon with a newly designed housing and cones to improve airflow even more. The phone number, if you're interested in Fleet Air Filters, 251-654-0892. You can also check them out on the web at fleet-airfilters.com. And they are, if you wanted to call tomorrow, by the way, we're here. I won't be answering the phones, but they are open till noon on Saturdays as well if you have any questions for them. I'm going to get to some questions from you. If you're listening online and you want to join us, we've got some lines open. The number to dial, 347-884-8327. And if you're on that call, press 1, and we'll start getting to those questions. As long as we've got questions, I'm just going to stick with those tonight. Let's go to Iowa to start off tonight. Jay, welcome to the program.
Hi, Kevin.
Hey there.
I was wanting to know about DD15 engines. Do you know if all of the DD15 engines are the same engine with just different programming?
I believe so. I don't think that there's been any significant changes in the physical makeup of the DD15 yet. Now, we have the SCR version of the DD15 is on the road now. I don't think there's any real physical differences between that engine and a pre-SCR. It has the after treatment on it, I think, is the only difference.
But what I mean is the 455 horsepower engine the same engine as the 560?
Okay. Yes, those are just, it's all same block, same turbo, same everything. Physically, it's the same engine. It's just those are all ECM changes.
If you have a 455 with the lower torque rating and a 560 with a higher torque rating, and you're going down the same road at the same speed, will they or will they not use the same amount of fuel?
They should use the exact same amount. Let me qualify that. There are no two trucks that are identical as long as we know. As long as we know that. There's going to be physical differences in any truck when it comes to fuel mileage. But, yes, when you're on the level, and let's say we're producing 10 pounds of boost, to move the truck down the road on the level at 60 miles an hour, those two trucks will use the same amount of fuel.
Okay. Would you ultimately save fuel by having it cranked up to the 560, because then there would be less shifting on hills, and which runs the RPM up? I mean, would you not be able to get better fuel mileage with the 560 rather than the 455?
Yes and no. The possibility of getting better fuel mileage is there if we use that horsepower wisely. Let's say that 90% of the time when we're on the level and we're using cruise and we're letting the truck do its own thing, we're producing probably or using 400 horsepower or less on both of them, so it doesn't really matter what's there. Now, that other 10% of the time when we get into the hills, if we use the additional horsepower correctly, then, yes, I do believe there is an opportunity to save some fuel that way.
I see. Because right now I'm driving a 2010 Cascadia with a 455, and, I mean, I like the engine. I mean, it's a lot better to me than what the D60 was. But it does, you know, when it comes to hills with a heavy load, I mean, you know, it could use a little bit more oomph going up the hill.
Right, right.
Go ahead.
That probably is because of the horsepower and torque settings, because almost everybody else I've talked to with the 500-plus settings have said just the opposite, that it's one of the best pulling engines they've ever seen.
Yeah. Well, and there's all kinds of undocumented features on the computer too.
I mean, that is true. Yeah,
and I can't find anywhere where they're written down. This is a 60 mile an hour truck, but I can get 62 out of it. I actually can get 65 out of it. I can get 67 out of it, and I can get 72 out of it just by fiddling with the cruise control and the throttle and everything. You know, I get bored.
The days of an absolute speed restriction are kind of going away. What you're seeing in a lot of ECM programs, and not just the DD15, but Volvo and Cummins, is kind of a driver reward setup, where if you do whatever it is the company wants you to do for a certain percentage of time, they actually reward the driver by allowing a higher speed or a higher RPM, and it can be completely customized. So it gets pretty crazy, all the possibilities and like you said, the options built in. What I would like to do, and I haven't had a chance, one of the best ways to learn about the ECM and the settings is to be able to plug in a reader and literally go through all the screens in the ECM and see what the options are. I would love to be able to do that with the DD15, and I just haven't been able to do that yet. But
I mean, it's got to be an awful complicated computer program.
Yeah, not so much complicated. I think once I can dig into it and see the screens, it's really... Complicated isn't the right word. You have a lot of options, so you have to look at each screen and say, okay, what are my options here, and what would I accomplish by changing this setting, and then just go through all the possible settings.
Yeah, can you explain, I mean, you can get a 455 with a lower torque rating or a higher torque rating, but it's still 455. Can you explain? I don't see how they can do that.
Horsepower and torque are two completely different things. And I know we associate them together, and they're not. And maybe one of the best ways to think about it is it's not that difficult to take a V8 engine, gas engine in a car, and get it to 450 horsepower. I mean, that's really not that big of a deal. So You know, I have a one of my trucks is only 350 horsepower. So logically, shouldn't that 450 horsepower V8 outpull my 350 horsepower inline six?
I mean, logically, you would think so, except the pistons are a lot bigger in the inline six.
We produce a lot more torque.
Yeah.
Out of a diesel engine, and we produce a lot more torque at low RPM comparatively, you know, compared to a gas engine, the kind of RPM we're going to be running to produce that 450. So if we think along those lines, then we can see there is a huge difference between horsepower and torque. And that's really, you know, torque is really what does the work. Torque is what gets the weight up the hills and what gets the weight moving. And it's really confusing. I mean, even when if I were to read you the differences between horsepower and torque, it really still doesn't click. But
yeah,
they are two very different things.
It's kind of a confusing concept.
It is. And even when you have it explained with the physics of it, it's still kind of a confusing concept. But
yeah.
And the other thing, and the reason we have lower torque settings is because torque is what will do the work, but torque is what also can do a lot of damage if it's not used properly. You know, we have torque ratings on our transmissions and our drive lines.
Yep.
And, you know, you shouldn't match up an engine with 2,000 foot-pounds of torque to a transmission that's only capable of handling 1,650. But we also know that if you were to do that, if you were to over-torque the driveline, if you put a good driver in it, everything would be just fine.
Yeah.
But the wrong driver in there and you'll tear up components pretty quick.
Oh, yeah, I can see that, yeah. Well, if you had a 455 with the lower torque rating, the 455 with the higher torque rating would climb a hill better?
Yes.
Okay.
Companies choose the lower torque ratings to not tear up drive lines.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have this leased, and when the lease is up, then I'm going to have more options of what, you know, I can do to an engine, and
right.
this is just for future reference of what I want.
That's the real difference. If we have that freedom to go in and choose those things, knowing that we're not going to abuse the horsepower, we're not going to abuse the torque and tear up drive lines and tires and clutches, and then we can use those things to our advantage.
Okay. I got it. Okay, well, thanks for your information. I really, really appreciate your show.
You're welcome. Thanks for the call. Let's see. Let's move on down the line here. Let's go to North Carolina this time. Warren, welcome to the program.
Hey, Kevin. Can you hear me?
I can. You sound great. Go ahead.
Thank you. I feel like I have an associate's degree in trucking business and beyond because I've been listening to you for 2 years.
Great.
I'll tell you about my last 3 weeks. I've spent about right at somewhere between 12 and 13,000 from the first creeper I bought to my past Landstar inspection that I just got in an $8,200 97 Volvo. And I'm bringing it home right now. So
fantastic.
So, and that's, like I said, the two rental cars, gas, every sandwich I eat, that's everything included in that. And like I said, it's somewhere between 12 and 13,000 I spent total over the past 3 weeks, and I feel like I got a good solid truck. It should get somewhere between 6.5 to 7 miles to the gallon. So.
Well, that's exciting.
And I have one last thing to get done today. To pass the inspection and I go to orientation next week, so I'm pretty happy.
Fantastic. Well, I want you to stay in touch and give us regular updates on what's going on.
will do, and I'm trying to figure out what's the first thing I need to do next. Once I get a little money in my pocket, would it be OPS1 or maybe Heaven's Coolant, or what would be your advice on that?
You know, I like to start off with the OPS1 just because there's multiple benefits. We're going to protect the engine. We're going to lower our maintenance cost. We're going to, because when we put on the OPS, we go to a regular analysis program, we're going to be able to identify problems earlier than if we didn't have it on. And if we switch to synthetic, we're going to be able to improve fuel mileage. That's a lot of benefits out of one product. So it is one of the first things I like to do. And then along with that or immediately after that, I like the inexpensive ways of improving fuel mileage. The Fleet air filter is turning out to be a great addition. It allows that engine to breathe better. We're actually filtering more dirt out, so we're seeing cleaner oil samples. And between that and a muffler, we're allowing the engine to breathe in and out better, and we haven't spent, you know, a whole lot of money doing it.
Right. Well, I looked at about 35 to 40 trucks over the past 2 weeks, and I got a lead on this one about Wednesday of last week, and I went out and saw it, and I knew somebody took care of it because it's 14 years old, and a lot of the stuff I looked at that was a lot younger just felt like junk once I got in this one, I tell you.
Fantastic. I love that. And if more people would do that, if more people would take the time to go through that many trucks and make the comparisons and make the notes and look for that one truck that's right, I would get a lot less phone calls on the air saying, I bought this truck and the fuel mileage hasn't been right. It's been back in the shop 3 or 4 times and, you know, the money's killing me and what do I do? You know, at that point, many times I get frustrated because it's too late to do all the things we should do then. You've already bought the truck. So I'm really glad that you followed through that process and you were that diligent in it. And, you know, the other thing is, throughout that process, looking at 30 to 40 trucks, you learned a lot more about trucks, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. No, well, not to mention what I've learned. Kind of, you know, I've been driving about 12 years, been a company the whole time. But, you know, over the past 2 years, just learning, you know, this and that, and it's been really, really, you know, informative. So, but, you know, I got to this one. And this is the first one I did a dyno, or I pulled it into a shop and told the guy, give me a reason not to buy it, and he couldn't give me a reason, And then I went and I you know, told the guy about getting a dyno at a Detroit diesel, and they were kind of, you know, you want a dyno on an $8,200 truck? I said, yeah. I said, if I could $8,200 and then get money on top of that for a dyno, and I got a solid truck, I feel like I spent my money, you know, pretty good. And, you know, and I was actually debating if they said the top end needed to be done. I really like this truck a lot, so, you know. I was debating, you know, whether I would do that or not, but if they told me it needed a complete motor, I would have walked away. But they came out
right.
And said it was tight from top to bottom. So I said I'm going to have to do the deal then. So
you know that one change in our thought process makes all the difference in the world. And the change is you just mentioned it. When we go out looking to buy something or looking for a carrier or making a decision, we always go into it looking for the one that we want. And what happens when we do that is we really settle on something that's much less than it could be. It's easy to find something we want. You walk in, you look at the truck, you go, wow, I kind of like this. It's clean. You know, it's comfortable, the price is right, I can get it. It's easy to find things that we want. When we stop that and say, okay, I'm going to start looking for any reason I can not to do this, not to buy this truck, not to sign on with that carrier, not to sign this lease purchase. I'm going to look for the reason not to do it. And then when you get to that one where no matter how hard you try, you can't find the reason, then you know you've got the right one.
That is definitely true. I kind of went into it wanting a 97 Volvo because I like that body style, but I looked at everything. I liked Internationals too, but I knew if I found a tight, clean 97 Volvo that performed well, that was probably going to be the direction I went. But I was open to
right.
anything I could find, you know, from International. Obviously, I didn't want a Peterbilt or anything like that. I just, you know, even the aerodynamic ones I really don't care for. But,
right.
you know, this is kind of the body style I was definitely looking for. And like I said, I found one that's been taken care of. So I really think I did pretty good. And me and my wife had been talking about this for about two years now, doing this. And she just had a baby 2 weeks ago. And that's kind of, once you got pregnant, that was kind of my time frame on when I knew I could make the jump. So I got
wow.
my health insurance squared away.
Yeah.
All that good stuff. And then, you know, and like I said, we talked about it. And I said, sink or swim on this, it ain't gonna be for lack of sheer preparation.
That's right. Well,
we've been debating this for a while, but I'm gonna let you get to somebody else, and I'm gonna keep listening.
Fantastic. Hey, congratulations on the new baby and on the new truck too. What an exciting time for you guys. And I want to hear back. I want to get regular updates on what's going on with both of the babies. All right, let's see. Oh, you know what? I've got an oil sample I want to go over here. Lisa, if you're listening, do we have, who is this? Is this Brent's oil sample? Do we have Brent on the call? Lisa,
we do not have Brent on the, I am paying attention. We do not have him on the
good.
Call. He's in the chat room.
Okay, good. Are you chatting with him in the chat room?
I am. What would you
can
like
you
to
ask? Okay, I would like to know if he's using any oil additives. I'm seeing high magnesium, which isn't a problem, but it's more than what we would expect to see in this particular brand of oil, and that's usually because of some sort of an additive that's been put in. So I'm wondering if that's what's going on. Other than that, I'm not seeing
no
additives.
Oil nope.
Okay. It's possible then, and this isn't all that uncommon, that the oil formulation has changed and the lab isn't aware of it yet. And again, the high magnesium is not a concern. It's only slightly high, and it's an additive metal. It's not something that would indicate any kind of a problem. So it's just very possible that the oil formulation changed slightly and the lab isn't aware of it. The high lead is really nothing to be concerned about. 73 on the lead with, ask him how many miles are on this oil sample because it wasn't filled out. I'm going to assume that we're at about 60,000 miles on this oil.
Okay.
And if so,
he just sent me a message saying that the original oil might not have been Rotella.
Okay. That would account for the high magnesium too. If there's
okay.
if the oil's been mixed or somebody topped off or a shop did it, you know, used some other oil and didn't really say it, then that would be an indication of why we're seeing more magnesium than what we would be looking for. But again, it's not a problem. Okay, over 75,000 miles on the sample, 73 on the lead is no concern at all. The reason it was probably flagged is because he didn't fill out the total miles on the oil. If the lab saw that it was over 75,000, I don't think they would have flagged that at all. And it's really only flagged at a 2, which is no big deal. TBN, just a tad low. My guess is that this engine isn't using much oil, so he's not putting in a whole lot of makeup oil. And that will cause the TBN to drop, but it's been dropping pretty consistently. And not really dropping all that much. So This looks like a great sample. Soot is 0.1%.
What is TBN?
What's that?
What is TBN?
TBN is total base number. And what it is that one of the major factors that we're trying to protect against in a diesel engine is the buildup of acids. The combustion process, the heating and cooling and all the things going on inside the engine create a very acidic environment, and we use a base to counteract the acid. So we start off, total base number starts off high. If we go back to his first sample, it was 7.55. And as that base has to counteract the acid, it is consumed. So we consume the base. The less healthy an engine is, the more of that base we will consume faster. So watching what happens with that base is a good indication of how well the engine is performing. And with 75,000 miles and not a lot of makeup oil, that base number is actually good. They've got it flagged at a 1 instead of a 0. But again, they didn't have the total miles on the oil. So that's actually a good number. When we see that the base is holding up well, the soot is just 0.1%. Less than 1% on fuel, no water, viscosity is slightly elevated, but again, really right in the range that we need. Oxidation and nitration are very low. Those are all indications of an engine that is running really well. So, does he have any other questions about that sample? And
magnesium is going down because, do you think the magnesium is going down because he's adding Rotella?
That's very possible. If it started off as a different oil that had a higher magnesium content, and now he's adding Rotella, which has a lower magnesium content, then we will continue to see that number drop. So that's really the most likely possibility there. Iron at 36 is extremely low. When we can go 75,000 miles and only see iron at 36, that's not a problem at all. And it's been a nice steady progression, which is exactly what we would expect to see. Let's go to Arizona. Ryan, welcome to the program.
Hello, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call.
You're welcome. What's on your mind tonight?
Got a couple things added to since you started the show. One of the things I think that would be a good idea for the maintenance boot camp would be how to do your own overhead. And I know every engine's different, but, I mean, they're just numbers in the settings. You know, maybe a flyer after the overview of how to go through and set everything, a flyer for different engines, Detroit Cat, Cummins, and so on, so that we could do it ourselves and, you know, save $300. They can't be that hard to do.
It's really not. Probably the most difficult, that once you know how to set the valves, probably one of the more difficult things is just getting to it. You know,
yeah.
In some engines, getting to the valve cover and getting it off is really where a lot of the labor is. And I love that idea. Even if somebody says, look, I'm never going to do my own overhead, but it's almost one of those things where I get the question a lot, like, what the hell is an overhead? What are they doing when they're in there? You know, and when you see it, then it really makes sense. You go, oh, well, that's no big deal, and you understand why we're doing it. So I think that would be a great station to have set up. Maybe even have it set up with a couple different engines because the overhead procedures are different on a Detroit or a Cat or a Cummins. So it'd be nice to see it on the different engines. I think that's a great idea.
And then on the Signature B truck, I think an option that would be nice and something like that, because you're driving a nice truck that's comfortable and quiet and getting you lots of money, you may as well be able to sit back and enjoy some good, loud, hard-hitting music in between waiting for your shows to come on every night. Put a nice stereo in it.
There you go. I think that'd be great, a really custom sound system.
Yep, hey, exactly.
Maybe we'll take that one step further, and in the back we'll put in a Mac Mini and make it a complete entertainment center.
Perfect. That's a great idea. A little head unit up front so you can get all your music pretty easily and without having to take your eyes too far off the road.
Yeah, I love that. Good
idea. Thanks. I've got this cat, and I went through probably 15 different trucks before I found this one. It was ideal for what I was doing at the time, pulling the flatbed. I did the ECM. I did the oil sample, the dyno test. I went through it, you know, bumper to mud flap, top to, you know, roof to tire, and it was a good truck. ECM had a lifetime of 6.5 miles per gallon with, it was like 14% idle time. Truck came out of Utah. I was really happy with it. I had a list of things that I wanted them to do when I bought the truck, and I think this is where my problem came from. They needed to replace the exhaust manifold. It's got an Acer C15 in it, a VXS, and the exhaust manifold. And so I had him do that. And when he put it back together, they did it before I bought it. Drove it away. I was getting 4.8 miles to the gallon, horrible fuel economy. I changed my driving style, started pulling hills different, and the best I could get out of it was 5.5. A couple flukes I'd get up to 6, but it wasn't, and I could not figure out for the life of me what was wrong. Last night, I found my problem. These cats with the twin turbos, you can check your air-to-air all day long, or your charge air cooler all day long. There is so much plumbing between the two turbos. There are so many fittings in there.
And
you can't test them. You cannot test. It's a visual thing or feeling. You got to get your hands in there and make sure your engine fans off and feel for air. Well, I found it off of the high-pressure compressor to the pre-cooler. When he put it back together, he didn't get that flex pipe all the way up on the turbo on the compressor. And so it was just flopping around in there. I found it with the idle set at 1,000 RPMs. I could literally feel the pressure coming out of the crack in there.
That's a big leak.
Oh, it is.
If you can reach in and feel it, that's a big leak.
And at idle under no load, you know, a high idle of no load. And, I know that solved my problem. I did my research. The thing got great manifold pressure, you know, 48, 50 PSI. So I didn't think I had a problem on that side. I just thought I was going to throw the truck away. The last time we talked, that's basically what you said. I wouldn't put too much more into this truck because of your efforts being wasted. So I found that, and immediate difference. The thing feels like a whole new truck. I'm getting like a schoolgirl. I had to call and tell you about it, share this with another guy.
What this points out for me is that it how much it can pay, even if you don't plan on doing your own service work, how much it can pay off to just get a basic understanding of how to look for some of these things.
Yep.
Because you could have taken this thing to the shop 5 times and they would have never found this problem.
Kevin, I did. That's what got me.
Yeah, okay.
Many places and nobody saw it, and it was plain as day once they saw it. So,
yeah, see, they're not looking for that kind of stuff.
They're not.
You know, if it doesn't show up as a code, if it's not a broken part, when you go in and you say, look, my performance isn't what it's supposed to be or my fuel mileage isn't what it's supposed to be, that's the last thing they want to hear because they hate diagnosing that kind of stuff because they don't know how.
They can't think for themselves anymore. They learn from a computer and a book, and it's hardly hands-on. So it was a simple fix. and it really got me because that guy called yesterday on the evening show, the live show. He couldn't get manifold pressure above like 28 psi on a twin turbo.
And right.
I really think
right.
He checked his charge air cooler, and I really think that's probably where his problem. I mean, like I said, it's a plumbing nightmare, but you just get in there with some soapy water, and you will find the leak.
That's I'm going to add that to my list of things to check, especially, like you say, on that twin turbo, it's much more complicated, and it's
very
tough to see, and there's no way to test it other than what you just said. Get in there, get your head in there, get some soapy water in there. Get in there and look for the leaks now, and I'm really glad that you found that. That's exciting. Now imagine, have you looked at the Max Force 15 engine yet?
No, I heard you talking about it. I haven't got a chance to go do a Google search, but yeah, I can. I would have nightmares just even thinking about that.
Four radiators, two water-to-air intercoolers, two wastegated turbochargers, a charger cooler. It's just an absolute. If you think that twin turbo Acert is a plumbing nightmare, you haven't seen anything until you've looked at that engine. And I agree with you that the twin turbo Acert is tough to get into some and see that stuff. But you, when you look at the International, you'll just shake your head and go, if we ever won. Have the kind of problem you just described, an air leak somewhere before the charger cooler, we're never going to find it. Or two, if we have some sort of a cooling system problem, four radiators and two water-to-air intercoolers, when somebody calls me with that engine and they say, I've got glycol in my oil sample, I'm just going to hang up on them.
Throw it away, dude. I'd rather sit down and watch all six Saw movies than go look at that motor.
Right.
That just scares the hell out of me.
I know. It's crazy.
I will keep you updated. I'll give you a call in about a week. I'm noticing now my fuel economy. I mean, I filled up after I fixed it last night, and I've got an extra 80 miles on my trip odometer than I normally would, only using a quarter tank, and I'm still above the mark.
Fantastic. So, I will look forward to an update on that. I'm looking at the calls, boy, and I better get jumping here and get to a couple more. Let's go to Don in Wisconsin. Welcome to the program. Don, are you with me? Ooh, let me check that again. Let's see. I think, oh, there he is. Let me try. Don?
Yes.
There you are. Go ahead.
I'm here. First of all, while I'm talking to you, can you pull up a website called Joe Performance, J-O-B-E Performance. When you pull that up, look at their charge air cooler on their Ford Excursion. And
okay,
while you're doing that, on the propane injection system, did y'all run a bigger air filter on that, or did you just use a standard, you know, just a standard, you know, Donaldson or...
Yeah, we were just using the standard air filter element. We didn't make any other changes whatsoever, and the propane company didn't recommend it.
Okay. I'm kind of curious as to why they didn't, because I have several friends that do, you know, sled pulling and small pickups, and when they run, you know, I got one buddy of mine that runs propane, nitrous, and water methanol injection. And, of course, you can imagine how much air he needs. He pulls 100 pounds plus boost.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, you have to have one heck of an air system. You know, and even on trucks, you got to have a heck of an air system. I don't understand why the propane company is not recommending, you know, a bigger air filter to suck in more air, because propane's a
Well, here's the difference. I completely believe in the performance enhancement capabilities of propane. No question in my mind. I've seen it proven over and over again. What I don't believe in is the fuel mileage increases from propane. Let me restate that. We saw a pretty significant fuel mileage increase on diesel. What I don't believe in is the cost effectiveness. that we end up spending more on propane than we save in diesel, but we did see a big increase. I don't think when we're shooting for the fuel mileage and the cost effectiveness, I don't think more air is going to do the trick. I can see why we need it on the performance side, but I don't really see it helping on the fuel mileage side.
I'm with you on that. It was just a curiosity question I had because I didn't know if he was running, you know, one of Flea air filters, you know, new boxes or something like that in there, or you had
We wanted to make sure we didn't make any other changes, so we stuck with just the standard filter. And you know, as far as propane on the fuel mileage side, I think I'm done as far as that goes. I'm looking at these coolers, these intercoolers.
That is interesting. Did you know on the Ford Excursion they got, we're on any 7.3-liter diesel on a Ford, they've got what, it's like 28 inches of piping. That thing cuts it down to 14 inches of piping?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's...
You just keep an eye on that deal there. I think that might work. We might be able to work out something on that with a big truck, I think.
I'm gonna bookmark that so when I've got some time, I can read through that and get my head around it. And maybe there's an idea there for the signature B truck. That might be the kind of stuff we're looking for on that. Let's go to Austin this time. Hugh, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Kevin. Fairtax Now.
Let's get it done.
Absolutely. Man, I think I'm just a little bit jealous. This guy's got a tight 97 Volvo with a Detroit engine in it.
Yeah, I know I am. As soon as I heard that, I thought, oh, wow, where can I get my hands on one of those?
and you get it for $8,200, and you can spend $15,000 on. If it's not already spec'd right, you can spend $15,000 just to get it all spec'd out right and have a money-making machine. Like, you can sit at home and just watch the money come out of it.
Absolutely. You know, and he said he looked at 30 to 40 trucks, and I was looking in that. I was looking for the exact truck that he just got, and I didn't have the time to look at 30 or 40, so I didn't get near the truck he got. We're pretty happy with ours.
It paid off for him, didn't it?
Yeah, it certainly did.
Listen, when you were asking about a wow factor, as you know, I put a new non-wastegated oversized turbo on my truck during the CMC and also some gauges. And this is the first time, you know, in 25 years of driving that I've ever actually attempted to drive by gauges. I've driven one or two trucks that had them in it, but I had no idea how to use them, and never occurred to me to ask anybody what to do with them.
It never really occurred to anybody.
Yeah. So anyway, so I got these gauges, and Bruce has given me a few little pointers on how to use them and to my best advantage and everything, and I've been doing that. And I'll tell you what I have found is that I'm using my cruise control a lot less. I'm still driving on cruise control most of the time, but I'm using it a lot less. And here's what I'm thinking what somebody ought to do is come up with a cruise control that doesn't just look at your speed and control speed, but actually reads your boost gauge and your exhaust temperature gauge and controls your speed, but set some parameters to keep it from overdriving the engine.
Well, it's funny you say that. There is a company that's working on technology that takes that idea and even takes it one step further. One of the problems with trying to set those parameters is that the truck doesn't know how big or how long that hill is. So
it cannot anticipate the hill.
Exactly. So there is a company out there that is working on an ECM and a cruise control system that would use real-time GPS data to know what's coming. Yeah.
Well, that's way beyond what I was thinking.
isn't that a cool idea?
Yeah, absolutely.
So now if we sit down and we put this all on paper and we say, look, if this engine produces 500 horsepower and 1750 foot-pounds of torque, and it's got this gear ratio and this drive tire size and all these things, and the sweet spot is right here, and now we are facing a hill that's a 3% grade for 875 yards. I mean, if we have all that data, we should be able to program that truck to go up that hill as efficiently as possible.
Absolutely.
And that's what somebody's working on.
You would do it manually. But here's what I found is that if I just run on cruise control, it's just as soon as I hit the bottom of that hill and you just start nosing up a little bit, my boost would just jump up to 30 pounds of boost.
Isn't that crazy? Yeah.
And then I'd be panicking, you know, kicking my cruise control off real quick. And the thing about it is I could ease off with my foot down to about 15 to 17 pounds and accelerate up the hill. You know, what do I need 30 pounds for? You know,
that's the crazy part is that when you take the cruise off and do it with your foot, you do it with a lot less boost and a lot less temperature, and yet you still get up the hill in about the same amount of time.
Or less. What I started doing is anticipating the hill. When I'm about a quarter mile before the hill, I kind of ease into it, get my boost up to around 10 to 15. And then as I start up the hill, I find myself, you know, backing off a little bit because I'm going over my set speed. And go up the hill with the foot and never get above 15 pounds of boost. And don't lose any speed.
It's more fun, too, isn't it?
Actually, it's wearing me out because you know how I am. I'm obsessive about everything.
it's like a new challenge in driving after all these years and all these miles.
It is, and there is a fun factor to that, and I'm learning something new. And by the way, I think I'm starting to envy you and Bruce Mallinson. I called Bruce today. I wanted to tell him how happy I was with my new turbo and what all I've learned from the gauges and everything. I called Pittsburgh Power and asked to speak to him. And she says, well, Bruce is not here today. We're not expecting him back until around August. And I'm thinking, oh, man, that's crazy. I said, that's the life. I think, you know, him and Kevin Rutherford just get to go out and play all the time and doing what they love and get paid for it. Wow, that's the life. Anyway.
I have to say we absolutely love what we're doing. I mean, the CMC was so much fun. We're down here now at Fleet Air Filters. And David, you know, you've got to meet David and watch him in a garage. He is just an amazing guy. He visualizes anything. As you're saying, could we do this? He's already got the dimensions down, and he has a real talent for fabrication, and it's amazing to watch him working. So I'm having a lot of fun doing that, but I got to tell you, we haven't, and I'm not complaining by any stretch of the imagination, but I really thought after the CMC we were going to get a couple days off, and we've been working on the mobile studio all week, every day. We ran into some problems with our satellite internet system.
It sure sounds good to that.
Yeah, we'll see here in a little bit. I'm a little nervous, but we finally got it working. It's kind of crazy, you know. They sent us the system, and we put it in, and what's called the elevation motor, the one that makes the whole satellite dish go up, was bad. So they had to send us a new one. And, you know, you don't think that the motor is going to be bad, so you try to troubleshoot everything else. And it turns out that it came right down to just a bad motor. So they overnighted us another motor, and we go up there and we put the motor in, And now the thing is doing all kinds of screwy stuff. I mean, nothing's making any sense. So we troubleshoot all day long, and we find out they wired the motor backwards from the factory. So every time we wanted it to go up, it was trying to go down. And it just, you know, it throws everything off. And who would think that they wired the damn motor backwards?
April Fools.
Yeah. So we finally found that this afternoon. We wired it the right way. Everything's working, and we'll see here in about 30 minutes what happens.
Looking forward to it.
All right. Thanks for the call, and we will talk to you again soon. I'm glad you're enjoying the new gauges and the new turbo. And, you know, you did it yourself, hands-on in the parking lot. That was what gave me the inspiration for the maintenance boot camp, seeing people who have been around trucks for a long time and do know this stuff but never really got a chance to learn from people like Bruce and Mike with just so much experience and knowledge, and the joy and satisfaction of getting your hands in there and getting dirty, or finding your own leaking air intake system, you know, when nobody else could find it. I love that kind of stuff. All right, we're all done. Thanks for joining me. We'll see you on the live show in 30 minutes. Good night, everyone.